Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. Remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Well, you know, it's just an awesome show always, but I always want to welcome back to the program Jarrett, my co-host. Jarrett, how are you?
Neil, doing great. Can't wait to share some information with our listeners, and hopefully they'll be able to carry something out with them today that will really, really help them with some of the things that they're dealing with as parents and educators and caregivers.
Well, absolutely, Jarrett. And I thought the topic today was perfect, poignant. We have four parts of our parenting book. It's all getting in the mix. First of all, it's going to be early intervention because that's your expertise. The second part's going to be parenting. The third part's going to be tutoring. And then last, adult and college education. Add teaching into that because we're forming teachers, and that's college and adulthood education. So you put those four into the Total Education cookbook, and really excited. But again, you have a parenting topic tonight, and it's going to be consistency. And I think that this is something that parents miss the boat completely.
Oh, there's no question about it. It's something that even my wife and I have a very hard time maintaining in our parenting of our own child. But it is the one of the first topics or the first subjects that I bring up with parents, especially when I'm in working with a family specifically on behavioral modification. One of the first things that I talk about with them is right after developing your plan of action is consistency. You know, everyone in that household really needs to be on the same page as to how they're going to handle behavior.
Well, in consistency, Jarrett, I think that is so important. And that's something, like I said, if you're going to start any parenting advice, if the family's not consistent, you might as well forget about it. And when you have two parents that don't agree, and it goes back to lots of different things, but they don't agree, you know for a fact, if the team's not all on the same page, you're not going to have success.
Well, and if you do, it's going to come at a price, and it's going to come much longer. It's going to take much longer to actually achieve success, or at least changes within the behavior. And as the child ages, that child will learn that there's inconsistency, and they will, not in any sinister motive, but that child will begin to play off the different components of inconsistency. So if you have the dad who's a disciplinarian and is the person who's, and then again, I'm not saying this is what I want to clarify for my listeners. Being the disciplinarian is not always the good thing. Meaning that person is not, there needs to be some flexibility. And if you have one of the parents who is that parent who always says no, that child will learn very quickly to go to the other parent. And that will lead to even more family challenges and family problems. So again, you know, just being the disciplinarian, I'm not saying that parent is the better parent.
Exactly.
That's what I want to be clear on.
I absolutely agree with that. So let's talk about how we can make sure that our families, parents end up being consistent. What would you do?
Well, here's the first thing that I ask parents to do: identify the challenges.
Yes.
And sometimes I go into a house and the parents are on two different pages on what the challenges are.
Right.
So that's the first thing that needs to be identified. Identify the challenges, even if you have to go to the most basic component. I can't get a diaper changed, or my child won't sit for dinner, or my child screams at me when they're angry, when they've been given a restriction. Now, that's usually for some older children, but or slams the door in my face. That's one that I hear quite a bit, especially with some older children. But you need to identify the challenges and agree on them. And, you know, sometimes I tell parents when I'm in their home in a session, I will say to them, okay, doesn't seem like we're identifying the same challenges. Let's try and find one that we can agree on. And then you work from there. So step one, identify the challenges and really kind of be on the same page with them, agree with them. Step two from there is now you're going to develop your plan of action for behavior modification, what discipline, what consequences, what rewards. You know, you have some parents who, you have one parent who goes overboard on the rewards, and you might have another parent who their reward is a smile. Well, you know, you have an older child, especially maybe a child 4 or 5 years of age, and that smile is not necessarily going to cut it as a reward when they know they can go to the other parent and get something far more tangible. So, again, you know, step one, identify the challenges. Step two, come up with a plan of action. And then step three is agree on that plan of action.
Absolutely. I think that if you don't do that, I think first when you talk about identifying those challenges, if you don't identify the challenges that are happening, and it's a couple, you don't agree on them, Jared, that's a big problem. If you don't agree exactly on what should be done, it's a really, really big problem that needs to be addressed, because a lot of times parents have two different ideas of what, where they want their children to be. And if they don't have that, you're not going to go through those next two steps.
Oh, absolutely. I can give you an example of one when I was working with older children, you know, going more towards into the teenage years. You know, I can remember families where, you know, this is certainly a much more serious topic, and a little bit off track, but I would just want to use it to emphasize the differences, you know, alcohol use and drug use. I can remember one parent saying, well, you know, we did it when we were younger, it's recreational. And the other parent saying, you know, in effect was, how long have you known this has been going on? You know, the one parent was clueless, the other parent knew about it and had not even informed the husband, and, you know, so they totally were off base, were totally on opposite pages as to what they saw as a problem or a challenge. You know, certainly with a 2-year-old, the challenges are not nearly as serious, but they can be just as significant. You know, my 2-year-old will not pick up toys, or my 2-year-old tantrums with every restriction. Now, from there, you really need to agree with that as a team, and then come up with a plan and stick with that plan as a team.
Yes, and Jared, absolutely. I think that that's the key. So, like, basically what you were saying before, to kind of reconnoiter our listeners, we went right to, first of all, making sure that they identify the problem. Then I guess it's coming up, coming with a plan of action, right? That's what you were trying to say.
That's right. And that's where the consistency really comes into play. Once you devise your plan of action, whether it's we're going to use a timeout, which I don't necessarily think is best for everyone, but if that's the plan that the parents are going to come up with, I mean, I will tell them the challenges involved with a timeout, but I will say to them, okay, now we need to come up with a consistent plan as to when we use timeout.
Well, you know, Jared, I think that we all know that that's not your favorite thing to do in the world. And there are so many different strategies before timeout. I think timeout's a great thing to utilize early, but when they get older, you really have to look at teaching a teachable lesson. So, but you're right, if they aren't consistent, regardless of whatever strategy you use, you have to be consistent, because if one parent decides to use timeout and the other one rewards them with a cookie, you don't have any consistency at all.
Right. Or if you have one parent who will say, sure, go ahead and do it. You know, here's an example of something I see with so many families that I try to help them with, and in no way do I ever criticize a family during our sessions, and even now with all our listeners, they know I'm very careful not to sound like I'm criticizing. I don't think you should criticize children, let alone adults. So I will see a family, and you know, they'll ask a child what they want to eat, and the child will say, of course, candy. Well, now you've opened up the whole situation of you need to not only get that child not to say they want candy, you need to get them to eat something else. And so you're working on two separate things. So here's what consistency looks like. Decide beforehand what you want your child to eat as a snack. Make sure that everyone in the household knows these are the options for a child. If you want candy to be an option, that's consistent at least. And then stay with it. So one of the things that I will say to a family is, if you're going to say yogurt or grapes, then you stay with yogurt and grapes regardless of how many times your child says candy. And you ignore each time that child says candy until they actually do choose the yogurt or grapes. And I have seen this so many times where one parent will say no 4 or 5 times, maybe even 6 times, and then right after the next time will say, go ahead and take candy, but this is the only time you're going to get it.
And the consistency is lost. And when you ruin that consistency, and that's the hardest thing, especially if we're talking about a mom that's home all day while dad is working or vice versa, where, again, they've gone through 62 battles. And then we come home in this situation, and when we kind of implement something else where they've been trying all day, we don't know the struggles. So that's why I guess a parent meeting isn't so important as well. You talk about the implementation, then you got to evaluate if it's working, right?
That is exactly right. If you feel that you have been consistent, and in future sessions, this is one of the things we look at with families, especially if we're not seeing a change in the child's behavior over a month, 2 months. It can take much longer than that. But usually within 4 weeks, you can see a little bit of a change, a little bit of a glimmer of hope. And when I'm discussing with that family, reviewing the strategies, I do actually ask them, how do you think things are going? Do you think tantrums are less? Do you think there's more compliance? Do you think your child is sharing more? Whatever those challenges may have been. And then reviewing that, okay, they're not working. Right, let's talk about some of the things we've been trying. Are they making a difference? Oh, you don't think you're being as consistent, and when you're consistent, you do see a difference. Okay, let's talk about what happens when we're not consistent. Like you just said, oh, well, we both got home from work late. We didn't have a chance to plan like we normally do. All right, now we can build some consistency with that. Tuesday evenings, those are challenging for you. You guys both work late. Let's come out with a plan to deal with that. You can make a plan for anything.
Definitely, Jared, you can make a plan for anything, and if we can do that, we will make sure that there's a situation. So in 30 seconds, what would be the last recommendation for consistency?
Well, you know, again, in 30 seconds, I would say work on things as a team. Encourage each other. Don't try to avoid the criticism of each other. Try to avoid situations that say, you just did what the therapist told you not to do. I'm the one who's sticking with the plan and you're not. Try to encourage one another. That will really play a big role in changing your child's behavior.
And one thing you have to remember is do not, and I make this mistake sometimes, do not criticize your wife or correct your wife if they're not consistent, or husband.
Oh my gosh, how could I have forgotten to add that? I mean, that's exactly right.
Well, I make that mistake, Jared, so at least I'll mention that. So I'll put that Neil Haley, the Total Tutor, makes that mistake. Because, again, I make mistakes like everyone else. Well, okay, thanks again for calling, Jared. We'll be in touch, all right? Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Good night.
All right. Good night. That was Jarrett. You're listening to Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Really like Tahira Thompson and talking about, I guess, educating us on dance and how to make it. Really interesting discussion. Well, now let's go to a topic that I love. Being having an undergrad in history and really love to talk about social studies, I want to welcome to the program Dr. Allison Wiley. Dr. Allison, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Always great. Always the great way to end the day is to interview such interesting people like yourself. And our topic tonight is to educate people about the UN. And a lot of times people don't really understand the UN, do they?
No, they don't. You know, particularly because in the United States, we don't see a lot of their efforts in our own borders. But trust me, the UN is a very big, significant governing body that encompasses almost the entire world, the entire globe, almost all of the nations of the world.
And that's the key point, that, again, as the United States, we can't take over every affair in the world because we're going to be strapped in so many ways. So it's so great that the UN is involved to help in efforts, relief efforts, situations where there's violence, where they have to kind of get help out people that are suffering, specific things like that. So that's one, some of the things that the UN is able to do, so that everyone thinks, oh, the United States is the world's police. The UN really kind of keeps together the nations so that we don't kind of break apart and anarchy develops, correct?
Absolutely, Don. And, you know, I just want to bring up a significant point. When the United Nations was formed, it really was formed after one of the world wars, and I can't remember if it's World War One or World War Two, but really the emphasis was that we did not want to go through another world war. And, you know, the thought was, well, how do we prevent that? And this is where you saw the nations of the world coming together to specifically say that we are going to identify the issues that cause war all over the world.
Yes.
And if we identify it, then we will prevent that. For example, if there's poverty in a country, you're going to get coup d'etats and you're going to get civil disobedience, which can cause to war. So really, the United Nations and most of their mandate is to provide the basic needs of individuals all over the entire globe, working through the nations.
Exactly. And Dr. Allison, I think that that's such a great thing. I mean, the humanitarian efforts that the UN's able to bring is just fantastic, because a lot of times, you're right, the World War, and it goes back to the League of the Nations after World War One, leading to, I guess, when they became the United Nations. And at first,
right,
the whole world was not looking at specifically this going to work out. And I think there are a lot of people still talking points, kind of downplaying what the UN does. But I'm so glad that you're on the show to kind of speak up for the UN, to say, hey, they're doing some great efforts that sometimes the media doesn't show up.
Well, thank you, Don. I mean, it's a great opportunity just to educate people on, even though they may not feel the impact of the United Nations, just because we are one of the blessed countries all over the world, we do play a significant role in the United States, because we're a big funding source for the United Nations. We have our own U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, and she does a wonderful job in representing the United States on behalf of the United, or the United Nations on behalf of the United States. And, you know, you can be a U.N. ambassador to a cause, or you can be a U.N. ambassador to a country. So there's a lot of things that people don't know about the United Nations. It is a big, big, big organization with many moving arms and many moving legs.
So I'm, again, because you're educating us about the UN, I could have you could come back three or four times, especially with the kind of questions I would ask. So let's talk about, how can I become a UN ambassador, Dr. Allison?
Well, you know, and that's what I want to emphasize. You don't necessarily have to be an ambassador to a country. You can be an ambassador to a cause. I believe President Kwafor of Ghana is the ambassador to world hunger. And then you can be an ambassador who's on consultative status with the United Nations, such as myself. The organization that I represent is the Word of Life Ministries International Third World Leaders Association. They're the only first full gospel ministry that received consultative status with the UN to help them do the big job that is needed, which is to fulfill the Millennium Development Goals by 2015. So you can attach yourself to an NGO that is accredited with the UN, or you can put an application online with the United Nations. Usually they want you to have at least 5 years in a specific field before you apply. And most importantly, you must be willing to travel, because a lot of the positions and a lot of the needs throughout the world are actually in countries that are outside of our borders, such as the third world countries of Africa and the Middle East and the Americas and things like that.
Well, one of the things what you're doing is important. I think part of your organization, I'm sure it's important to educate them as well, meaning education is a key to try to end poverty in the world, correct, where you're going?
Yeah, actually, Don, you've actually hit two of the four Millennium Development Goals. The Millennium Development Goals are goals that the United Nations has identified that are crisis situations within third world countries. And these goals have to be fulfilled by the year of 2015. Well, here we are in 2012, and it's almost over. So we only have 2.5 years to implement this, but they're focused on, like you said, poverty alleviation, education, advancement of women and children, and also global health. So it's a big, big, big job. And really, it's all hands on deck, in order to get it done.
So tell me how you would be able to do something like this in education. Let's just say, Dr. Allison, I keep creating my career as owning a tutoring and consulting company, and I really want to kind of give back and want to travel and be involved in creating an education plan in that area to kind of help end literacy in specific places, or make sure that we're educating them in many different aspects and go out there and volunteer my time to educate them. How do you go through a process like that? I think you were talking about the whole application process, but that is a, is it a tough process to, because I'm sure that you guys are, there's so many needs out there that they love people that could volunteer their time and efforts to these causes.
Yeah, and I think for someone who wants to get started right away, the best thing is to go onto the United Nations website and look at non-governmental organizations or civil societies that have been accredited by the UN to work directly with the UN and basically sit under the umbrella of the United Nations. And there are so many in America that have this consultative status. I'm not sure what state you live in, but if you go onto the UN website, you'll be able to identify an organization that is in your area that you can partner with. And specifically when we're talking about your area, when we're talking about education, basically you identify a country that you feel like you may want to have impact in, and you begin to develop relationships with that NGO and providing those services. For example, I have a project in Imo State, Nigeria, where they want to rebuild and restructure 1,500 schools.
Wow.
That's a lot. Build them from the ground up and, redo the curriculum and all things like that. And my job is to try to help them provide or get the funding that they need in order to be able to be effective and get the project up and going. So what I try to do is bring the private sector from the United States into their areas. And I tell you, I've got to really let your listeners know that a lot of the third world countries out there really want to be able to invite countries outside of their continents and their areas to come and partner with them, because it fulfills two of the Millennium Development Goals. When we're talking about these 1,500 schools, we're going to be fulfilling the Millennium Development Goal of education, and we're also going to be creating jobs in that area. So that solves the problem of poverty alleviation. Well, not solves it, but it does help in a big way.
So curriculum development, when you're talking about another country, that does not speak the language, how can you create curriculum? I mean, especially if you're pulling people from, I guess, Europe and the Western world to help create that curriculum. That's just a question as an educator wanting to know.
From my perspective, obviously I'm only effective in the countries in which they can understand me. So I go to English-speaking countries. Nigeria is an English-speaking country. They do have another language called Igbo. I think it's called Igbo. But, it's primarily English-speaking, so it would be very hard for you to develop a curriculum in another language, obviously. You don't speak that language, so you would want... Do you speak another language? I guess I better ask you that.
No, I don't, but I'm not a linguist. No, not at all. But, I mean, okay. I guess I have huge dreams, the organization, and especially to help others in specific ways in education and to see what works and what doesn't and study this. So, I mean, Dr. Allison, I'm shocked. You're a perfect fit for more than just the show that you're on tonight, the Total Education Spotlight Show. We could just kind of really just break down one of your bigger major goals, education, and just talk about the school. And then when you're not with your publicist anymore, you will always be a contributor to the network, because I need a guest like you to kind of give us this international perspective. We're on in the UK. We're trying to continue to expand. I'd love to expand my radio program to terrestrial radio out in those countries to educate people and to kind of give them ideas and tips. So we have to talk. We have to kind of sit down and chat at another time about things, because my goal is to take over the world in education, to help people in so many ways and through the radio waves able to do it. So you're right. So creating that curriculum is a challenge, especially now. Let's talk about English speaking countries now, especially the ones you're working with. Where do you see them rank compared to the United States in education? Is that a great question?
Not very well, and a lot of it has to do with the educators are not that educated. And then there's other things that we have to deal with as well, and I'm going to focus on the state of Imo State in Nigeria, just because I've been there and I've seen it. I went to a school, and there's approximately 800 kids in that school, and it's 80-to-1 ratio between teacher and student.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot. And there's not a lot of space for the children to learn. And the decks are demolished. You know, there's hardly a chalkboard. They just really need the funding in order to be able to get this done. They have a wonderful, wonderful governor in place who's primarily interested in advancing his state in the area of education. So he is a joy to work with, but he needs exposure. International exposure.
Right.
Yes.
Well, we need to
let the world know what he needs.
Exactly. Well, we need to bring him on the show. We need to bring him on the show. We need to Skype it out. We got to get this out there and bring him onto the show so we can get to our audience of that reaches so many people that are interested in education to get that word out. Because you're right. I mean, help you out. Help this process, this goal out. 80-1 ratio. That is ridiculous. Yeah. We're talking about class size matters. I mean, and how about like managing a class? Would you say that went through the observation, Dr. Allison? I'm sorry we're going more into education now, but this is my baby. Now, thinking about 80-1, how is it to manage a classroom as a teacher? Are they really willing to learn? It's just they're just so far behind academically.
They're so far behind, and it's just not conducive for learning. The school is, there's very little partition between the different classes, so they're just all clumped in them. Some of them don't even have toilets.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of the children don't even have shoes. And, you know, we could do better. Let me just put it that way. We could do better. They could do better if they had the support that they needed. The offer for the governor of Emo State to come on your show is most welcome. This is what he's looking for. He's looking for opportunities for the world to understand what is going on and where the need is. 1,500 schools is a lot of schools. But I can assure you every one of those schools actually need to be refurbished and rebuilt from the ground up. And it was heartbreaking to see, but the good news is that they have a governor who cares about it.
That's fantastic.
And he wants to change it, and he wants to talk about it, and is willing to work with anybody that will be able to implement his vision and his goals and his dreams. So they're on a good path of recovery.
We're going to try to use the media in this way and then connect people across the world and try to get people involved. Maybe the Catholic school that my wife teaches at, specific schools in the Pittsburgh area. I'm from Pittsburgh, by the way, and kind of really get into this. Maybe specifically, maybe someday I will travel to Africa with you. I do know people that live in Nigeria. By the way, there's an Opus Dei Center in Nigeria, and he came to visit me. He's a priest of Opus Dei that came to visit me at my classroom when I was still a full-time teacher. So this would be really a cool thing. This is kind of coincidence of these things happening and how I believe God brings us together in specific ways, but we are running out of time. Definitely going to have you back on, but let me know. We have to connect. We'll have to have a conference call to talk about things to kind of really connect internationally. But Dr. Allison, where can we find more information on your information in the UN and also your initiative?
Thank you so much. And I will be going back to Emo State in the country of Nigeria on August the 10th, and I'll be back, I guess, around the 22nd. So we definitely will touch base. I will express your willingness to help to the governor. And I just pray and trust God that he will take your voice throughout the four corners of the earth as you try to help others.
That's thank you. And get the word out and maybe get on in many countries, all in African English speaking countries to kind of help them. Maybe create tips for families that do that, because I don't think that there are a lot of education talk shows, and I have some great ideas. So you have to listen to links of other shows of mine on the network so that you learn about the tips. It's every show is different. It varies, but I didn't know how education related you were, but you truly are. And it was a blessing that you were on the show tonight. So again, where's your website?
You.
So what's the website we can find info on you?
To find out about the humanitarian efforts, go to sicknessanddisease.com, and you'll be able to see all the projects that I'm working on.
Okay, well, I wish you all the luck, and just we could talk for a lot longer than 13 to 15 minutes, so I appreciate you calling, but I have other guests, but yeah, I'm definitely going to have you back on the show, but I really want you to set up for the governor, and I really want to kind of look at, we can do Skype calls or to kind of do some radio interviews with people in the schools and everything. I think it would be just a great documentary.